and welcome to The Hearing, our music review show here on the channel. I'm John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's album, just a quick plug. I was on this week's episode of the Geek Questioner podcast. You'll find, of course, that will be in our all of our social media. It came out yesterday. As you're watching this, as we're recording this, it'll be in a few days. I'll be in our social media. Big thank you to Charlie and Aaron for having me on. It was ridiculously fun. And that brings us to this week's album, which is from 2006, At War with the Mystics by The Flaming Lips. The Flaming Lips are an American rock band formed in Norman, Oklahoma in 1983. The group recorded several albums and EPs on an indie label, Restless, in the 80s and early 90s before being signed to Warner Brothers and releasing their major label debut, Hit to Death in the Future Head. their titles are kind of insane. That was 92. They've received Enemy Magazine's Album of the Year, been nominated for a Brit Award, have won 3 Grammys. In 2002, they were placed on Q Magazine's list of the 50 bands you need to see before you die.
I almost saw them too this summer. I just missed them.
After this, I want to see them.
Yeah.
At War with the Mystics is the band's 11th studio album. It was released on April 3rd, 2006, and, of course, Warner Brothers, and resulted in 2 of their Grammys, Best Rock Instrumental Performance and Best Engineered Album Non-Classical.
I did not know that they got Grammys for this. That's amazing.
Because you were between 2 albums last time we talked, last week at the end of the show. You couldn't be deciding between this and Soft Bulletin. Made the good call because this is 2 of their 3 Grammys. It was also nominated for Best Alternative Album, and the 5.1 mix was nominated for Best Surround Sound Album of 2008. I'm guessing they brought that, or the surround sound version came out in 2008, I'm guessing. It was produced by The Flaming Lips, Dave Fridman, and Scott Booker, and it features Wayne Coyne on vocals, guitar, and keyboards, Stephen Drozd, I'm going to guess on that pronunciation, are bass, keyboards, drums, and vocals. Michael Ivins on bass, keyboards, and backing vocals. And Cliff, interesting spelling, Skirlock on drums and percussion. Reminder, I don't edit any songs into the video for copyright reasons, but down in the description you'll find links to At War with the Mystics on Spotify and YouTube so you can listen along with us. On to track 1. The Yeah 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 song, With All Your Power. And yes, I will be reading the full title.
Oh, okay. I was wondering about that.
I also, did you take any notes on the bonus tracks?
No.
I did. I'll just go through them quickly. A couple of them.
Did you listen to the one that, because on Spotify
the has Explained album.
The
commentary.
The Explained album is really
eye-opening. I saw that you listened to it, so you'll hopefully have notes on that. I didn't have a chance to.
It's really eye-opening, like some of like what they're aware of and what they're not aware of, and just because they did it just as the album came out, pretty much.
Oh, nice!
So it's just back from that, you know, perspective of 06.
And the song starts with a bunch of very high-pitched voices saying "Yeah, yeah, 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 yeah."
Someone apparently asked them if they were doing a song about the Yeah Yeah Yeahs who were just breaking at the time, kind of friends of theirs. Like they actually did work with Karen O on. She actually appeared on their next album after this, I believe. Oh, yeah. Embryonic.
I really wasn't sure at the time if that beginning was annoying or funny.
It is. They straddle the line between annoying and funny very often. They challenge you, I think.
And then the high-pitched voice comes in, just
right.
Among that, it was so Zappa.
You know, I listened to this, I don't know how many times. I'm like, where have I heard this before? And then it was when I first listened to this again, I'm trying to remember what day. I think we might have been Sunday or Monday. I was like, this is all Zappa. The whole meow.
Wayne Coyne is like Zappa meets Roger Waters, I'm going to say. Some country singer mixed in.
Well, right, they do. They're from Oklahoma, so you will hear country, and you're like, "What the fuck is it?" And then you're like, "Oh yeah, wait, they are from Oklahoma." Yeah. I think Soft Bulletin has a lot more country to it than this.
So it's a lot of Zappa influence, a lot of weird Zappa stuff, a lot of very Floydian stuff. I'm going to be mentioning Floyd a lot in this review.
Yeah,
you have to mention Floyd. Distinct country influence and a lot of Beatles. Speaking of which,
enough, they don't mention Floyd in any of the explanation. I'm like, are you kidding me? Come on, guys.
Think of the Beatles. The chorus of this was very Beatles. Before we get to that, some nice distorted bass.
Yeah.
And then in the first verse, it's would you do this? Would you do that? And then yeah. And it's would you do all these horrible things? Yeah. Second verse, it's would you be benevolent and altruistic? No. And on the second one, you get this deep voice come in on the nose, and then are you crazy? Which I think is corny.
Yeah. He does a little Frampton too with the talking guitar thing.
Yeah, I couldn't tell if that was a synth or a guitar with the voice box.
I think it totally sounded like a Frampton.
It could have been a talk box. Yeah, on a guitar. That part was really fun. I've heard this song three times so far. The first time I heard the album, and then there's an extended version at the end of the album as a bonus track. So I A-B'd the two. After just listening to it three times, the song has been perpetually stuck in my head.
it's kind of a holdover from Yoshimi, it sounds like to me. I think that's why they chose it as an introduction to the album, like the first song. Right, like this is where we just left off, and then later on there's more about where they're pushing ahead to.
But it's one of my favorites. I coming from that perspective of I can't tell if it's annoying or funny, it ended up being one of my favorites on the album. On to track two, Free Radicals, a hallucination of the Christmas skeleton pleading with a suicide bomber. Where do they come up with these titles?
LSD.
Probably. Coyne's falsetto on this was very unexpected.
Oh, really?
I should explain. Before this album, the only songs I really knew of theirs were She Don't Use Jelly.
Yeah.
Which was the first thing anybody heard from them. And Do You Realize?
Which yeah, I was never was a big fan of the 90s. Overplayed. Yeah.
I had heard a couple of songs. I think I just based on the title, I wanted to hear Yoshimi at one point. So I heard it once. But those two songs, Jelly and Do You Realize, are the only songs I really knew before this. So hearing Lane Coyne do this dead-on falsetto really caught me off guard. And the guitar riff is very St. Vincent.
I mean, this, I think, is even more Zappa than the Yeah, Yeah, Yeah song, because, I mean, he does the, not long,
Yeah, there's Zappa all over. The guitar riff that comes in, something Annie Clark had to have been inspired by, because this was a year or two before she got started.
Yeah.
Couldn't quite get a handle on the groove until the drums came in. But I also was reminded a lot of David Bowie. I don't know exactly which song, but I hear a strong Bowie in there.
I think a lot about Queen with this, yes. With that riff.
And there's another later song that I'm going to mention Queen again in. That riff is very Queen.
And of course, a falsetto singer.
And then there's some electronic sounds that come in the second verse that reminded me of like chattering droids. They really like their electronics.
Oh yeah.
And there's a line in the middle of the song, a line in the song, you're turning into a poor man's Donald Trump. That has so changed meaning in the last 12 years.
They talk about that. One of the things they talk about, since it's 06, they're talking about George W. Yeah, like if you want to interpret stuff as just railing against George W. Bush, you can. But luckily, hopefully in the future, he'll be gone and people just interpret things, face value, kind of like what a relief that'll be. And I was like, you don't know the half of it, boy. You just don't know the half of it. And I think they've even come back to say that like it was just a dumb coincidence that they did it. And of course, they had idea.
The line made sense in a very different way at the time. Trump was this billionaire, playboy at the time. Yeah, so it had one meaning then, very different meaning now.
Yeah.
On to track three, The Sound of Failure, It's Dark, Is It Always Dark?
I think really... this could be one of my all-time favorites, honestly. Okay.
This had a really nice mellow opening, which was a surprise at this point.
Yes.
Because I was expecting the Sucker Punch again.
You get these two space rock songs, mm-hmm. and then pretty much here for the next, like, three songs.
Just really mellow and lush, very beautifully produced, very 70s.
It's almost a Genesis, you know, suite in itself, you know?
Reminds you put the me three of Todd together. Rundgren. Actually, reminds me a lot of Todd Rundgren.
Like, when you get that whole, that classical acoustic, and mm-hmm. then
yeah.
for the verse, and then the chorus kicks into this Watcher of the Skies guitar, you know, riff. you know, and then in case you didn't get the Genesis references, they end the song with the flute solo.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, it's just from beginning to end, uh-huh. it's almost like a tribute to them. But the subject matter is just so heavy.
I wasn't really paying attention to a lot of lyrics on the album.
Well, it's always been about a young woman dying of cancer.
Oh, wow.
And you know what? I didn't get until listening to the explanation. Mm. It's from the point of view of the young girl's friend.
Oh, wow.
Getting over it.
Oh, man.
And it's like the sound of failure. And it's like, what does it mean to be dead? And, I mean, just... Mm. And of course, it's dark. Is it always this dark? You know, just like... Oh, yeah, my. It's just life. You know, you just got to live with it is kind of the answer at the end.
Wow. And on that note, on to track 4, My Cosmic Autumn Rebellion, The Inner Life as Blazing Shield of Defiance and Optimism as Celestial Spear of Action.
And it's I think it's a very companion, you know, much a companion, definitely piece, companion piece. Not again, a failure.
Nice lush synthy opening.
Yeah, very Banks.
This is the first time on the album that Coyne's voice reminded me of She Don't Use Jelly.
Yeah,
back into that croaky kind of country thing.
Right. Yeah, in the middle of this weird Genesis kind of thing, you suddenly get this country twang. You know, they say autumn's a coming. You
and
know?
It's like this country vocal with this lush pop ballad.
And you first you're thinking like, is he just putting this on? And you're like, no, wait a minute. No, he's really from Oklahoma. Yeah, you keep forgetting that. Yeah. You know, it's just probably how he would talk.
That's probably more natural for him, you know, just because he looks very different. You know, if you look at Wayne Coyne, you almost expect a British accent.
Yes, very much. You do. You expect him to just talk like a Brit, and instead he's Oklahoma.
Yeah, yeah. But I said so. It's this lush pop ballad until the guitar solo comes in.
And yeah, it just goes up into like what sounds like Mike Rutherford did on The Lamb, kind of with the just that guitar blast.
Loud guitar solo, and then this other extended on the instrumental section, extension on the instrumental section that just continues to get loud. And then they bring that in with the earlier arrangement.
Right.
This nice mellow synths.
And it's, you know, it's an affirmation, you know? It's they did say in the explanation, and of course I didn't think I really needed this because I thought it was pretty obvious for the album. Every song starts out with like a negative, and like and just down, and then it ends with on a positive. Oh, wow. You know,
I really need to focus on the lyrics here.
and so pretty much, you know, it's you know, it's just it's again it's carrying on, you yeah. know.
On to track 5, Vein of Stars. Again, the lush, mellow. It picks up a bit with the acoustic guitar and piano.
Right.
And it took me a while to notice. The acoustic guitar is panned hard left. The piano is panned hard right.
Okay.
Which is an interesting sound. And it seems like something that would seem out of place to me. But it just kind of works for the song because you've got all these synths in the middle.
Yeah, I think they like have a whole bunch of things sampled in there. They were saying mm-hmm. that they have them playing the chords, kind of. It's just this one crazy thing.
And then the mood changes for the instrumental section, which I really have been struggling to try to describe.
Yeah,
kind of just rising and ethereal. It reminds me a bit of the guitar solo in Space Oddity.
Yeah.
But also some like 60s TV music. a little bit.
Well, like, yeah, Bowie's a huge influence on these guys. They were accused of kind of ripping him off. Do you realize as a ripoff of Space Oddity? But
and this really sounds like the solo in Space Oddity a bit. But yeah, I don't know how to describe that midsection, but it's really fascinating.
And of course, they were. You know, I didn't pick this out, but the flutes, the flute loops that they did here, they were going for Miles Davis.
Okay, because the flute really features on the next one. Speaking of which, on T-Track 6, the wizard turns on the giant silver flashlight and puts on his werewolf moccasins.
He said, I think I could have just kept going with that title, like a whole Lord of the Rings, story.
And I love the wizard turns on dot, dot, dot.
Yes. Giant silver flashlight. They throw an instrumental in here.
And it starts with these odd sound effects, which, you know, are par for the course for them at this point. And the drums come in, and this one feels very Floyd.
I was thinking more King Crimson, actually.
Really? I get more, because it's not really, like, there aren't a lot of tricks in this one. It's not really highly technical.
Well, even in the, like, I Hear the Wind, you know? Okay,
yeah, they're kind of mellower stuff.
Yeah.
I hear a lot of of Time. It has a very Time kind of groove, and the instrumental right before that.
I love, this is probably my favorite part of the explanations. This said this was like the newer sound they were pushing towards in the future. They describe it as Black Sabbath meets Herbie Hancock.
Because it sounds like, to me, it sounds like worked. Floyd. It sounds like Floyd, except there's a jazz flute in place of Gilmore's guitar.
Yeah.
And then as this speech synthesizer comes in, and then when the lead guitar finally does appear, it's properly prog.
Yeah.
And Coyne is the only guitarist credited. No, Draws plays guitar as well, yeah. So, yeah, some impressive David Gilmour impression there. They're in a couple spots.
Oh, yeah.
On to track 7, It Overtakes Me, The Stars Are So Big, I Am So Small, Do I Stand a Chance?
This is so Zappa.
The beginning was very Beatles for me, that counting. 1, 2, 3, 4. Very reminded of Ringo there. And I loved the, you can turn it up a little more, a little spoken part.
A little Spinal Tap.
Just some nice distorted bass. The drums were a very creative approach to the groove because it's not a straight groove. I mean, the song has a straight rhythm, but the drummer was doing something very creative with that. And I've realized why the bass stands out so much. I keep mentioning the bass. The guitars are usually panned, like hard right, or hard left, rather, which really gives the bass some room, and it fits. This band loves their panning because I think the band was involved with the engineering as well. And yeah, they love to push things to the side. Fortunately, they kept the kick, snare, and bass in the middle. And the lead vocal. Speaking of vocals, and this is, again, where Queen, you mentioned Queen earlier. There's a flanged vocal on the right during the instrumental section that was very Queen.
Yeah. Okay.
And then the bass vocal on the left, I loved kind of answering that.
So I think they get a little Pink Floyd, more in like the second part of the song.
Yes,
there's two parts to this.
Because the song seems to end about halfway through.
Right. Yeah, if you're not paying attention, you'll think a new song has begun entirely. But no, it's actually do fit together.
And this is another word I'm going to be using a lot for this album, ethereal. A nice like ethereal vocal. And then this slide guitar comes in that is very Floyd.
And then it kind of get like this, I was going to say Hackett, but it might almost be Aunt Phillips acoustic, you know? Yeah. I mean, it gets very just down to earth at the end almost.
And then just ends on these really creepy sound effects.
Yeah.
But I'm realizing I really like the high end of Coyne's voice because he kind of sings this occasional high part in the second half of the song. On to track 8, Mr. Ambulance Driver. This song really had to grow on me, but it's another one of my favorites now.
It's I think more like a Steely Dan sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. I have countryish pop with sound effects. The voice clips at the beginning remind me a lot again of Floyd. Nice soft vocal. I don't have a lot to say about this one, but I just really like it.
It may actually be my pick for one of the weakest on the album, but it's isn't saying much because well, yeah, I think this is a solid album, honestly. Even with like the stuff where they're just fucking around is just is interesting, I think.
On to track 9, Haven't Got a Clue. This is not a Drumarama cover, just want to pick that up. Because I love the Drumarama song by the same title. So I almost forgot about that one. It's acoustic guitar pop with weird affected voices and sound effects. Which
I've always had a soft spot for this one, despite the petty lyrics and the...
And this is a case, and they don't do a ton on this album, but there are a few situations where the sound effects start kind of mellow in the first verse, and then by the third verse, they've completely overtaken the song.
Right. Are those electric kazoos they're using?
I'm just assuming they're weird electrical sounds. I don't know. I didn't really analyze them much.
I think they said in the explanation, though, that this wasn't like, lyrically, I think this wasn't theirs.
Oh, okay. I love the line, every time you state your case, the more I want to punch your face.
That they were working with a guy who was working with Beck, and he had like a whole bunch of songs, and they took one off his hands, pretty much.
And it ends with these kind of ethereal affected ahs and bells. It just, you know, it gets kind of overtaken by these sound effects and these kind of, you know, just dissonant noises, and then just ends very kind of beautifully. On to track 10, I'm not going to pronounce this as a word, I'm going to say the WAND.
Okay.
Will always negates defeat. Which, from what you were saying about the lyrics, which again I need to revisit, that kind of sounds like a mission statement.
The explanation was funny because he had like this picture of like a wizard, you know, hand holding a wand and, you know, with sparkles coming out of him. He said, you know, the wand, wouldn't that be a great name for like a prog band? And, you know, I think he was half thinking of forming, you know, a prog band himself. And they're like, I just do a song on it. That's much easier.
Starts with a nice heavy riff, hence the prog influence. Love how prominent the bass are. The bass is, and I really don't have a lot of notes on this one.
At first I was thinking Boston, but then I realize it. It's Argent. Hold Your Head Up.
Oh, yes. Oh, wow.
And it has that same emotional impact, too, where you're just like, we're going to fight these motherfuckers. Yes, yes. Like, I mean, it's about, of course, just living and, you know, overcoming again, just like everything else. But yeah, I've always loved this one.
And there's a weird backwards symbol just in like the last half a second. On to track 11. Apologies for my pronunciation of this one. Pompeii M. Rotterdammerung. This is pure psychedelia.
Yeah, if you've missed the Pink Floyd influences throughout the album, this one, they come and just hit you over the head.
There's a Mellotron.
This is pretty much one of these days which
it's this Mellotron and this nice ethereal harmonized vocal, but then this heavy guitar comes in, and it's just straight. It's just mainline psychedelia. He's just getting that influence out straightforward.
Now, I'd always caught, of course, you know, I mean, I think I was, this is probably way after I'd played the hell out of Pink Floyd's Metal, that they pretty much influenced this album. But the explanation opened my eyes to something I didn't catch. They were really going for a Wagner feel.
Oh, yeah, from Rotterdammerung. Yeah,
right.
German. Just really does say Wagner. And yeah, it is. I get that now because the harmonized vocals, I was feeling more kind of mellow about them, but they are kind of operatic.
Yeah. With
the big guitars. And if Wagner was alive today, he'd be playing heavy metal. So
I mean, I like the song when I thought of it as a Pink Floyd ripoff, but then like thinking of it as Pink Floyd meets Wagner. Mm-hmm. Holy shit. Yeah. That's awesome. I was like, why do I like this song? It's not original. I mean, it's just clearly derivative. But, I mean, they were taking that Pink Floyd And I guess raising it a Wagner. So what can you do? I mean, they do build to like this very operatic tension at the end, and it just really works.
On to track 12, Going On. This is the last track of the main album.
Yeah, and I remember that one. The bonuses. The one episode where I said, you know, you end the album after you have the big epic, then you end the album with like the
ballad.
This follows the format.
Well, not the ballad. It's just piano pop. You know, they
did you end the album with like this mellower thing, of like, and you know, they made it through, kind of,
and
you know.
And it's about endings.
Yeah.
Like, listen, you'll hear it. We're getting near it.
Yeah.
It's just beautifully self-aware. I loved the pan on the chorus.
It's another Pink Floyd reference. And from Animals, you know, the stone, just like in the background. Instead, they're saying home.
Yeah. Well, home. No, and then it's just the just caught me because I think it reminded me of Yeah a bit.
Well, yeah,
it's just a great bookend.
It's so Zappa, isn't it?
yeah, absolutely.
Where he's kind of saying, yep, uh-huh.
I'm going to go on with some notes about the couple of the bonus tracks, but I just, you know, on the last song, I have to put this out there. It's a country prog album.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I didn't think that was possible. That's
kind of what the Flaming Lips were. Like, the Soft Bulletin was even more country, but I guess it wasn't as quite as prog as this. Uh-huh. I think this was kind of their prog peak. And then, like, after this, they get way more electronic and weird. Uh-huh. And then after that, you can't even really recognize songs anymore, kind of thing.
I'm going to have to deep dive into their catalog. Cause...
Like I said, peaks and valleys, as I was explaining off air last week.
We can explain on air?
Yeah, well, I mean, right. So, I mean, they're not a consistent band. This is like... They're at this phase of prog rock, but you know, they're pushing on to more experimental stuff after this. And I think right now, the last album they just put out, which was still pretty damn out there. I can't even pronounce the title of it, Ozclean Melody or whatever. where like the lead single had like Reggie Watt doing like this weird James Earl Jones impression voiceover about unicorn shitting everywhere and stuff. I mean, that was more down to earth though than the stuff that they were doing. Like between, they were really lost, I think, years before this because they were doing a lot of covers. I don't even know. They just weren't writing anything. They covered Dark Side of the Moon and they covered Sgt. Pepper, which I mean. Those albums already had been covered by Easy Star All Stars. Like, there isn't probably, even an original thing to cover those albums. Yeah. I mean, granted, they had a lot more celebrities and stuff helping them out, like Rollins doing the, you know, I Have Not Gone Mad part, you know, the Dark Side of the Moon, and just among many others that joined them.
Now, you know the band much better than I do. Does Coin pretty much write everything? And is he like the main voice, or do the rest of the band
have... Yeah, I think he's the main voice. And Steve Draws, you know, helps him out a lot.
Because I'm just trying to imagine, especially, even just after this, but especially given what you just said, a Wayne Coyne solo album.
I think Draws does a lot of the music side of it, actually.
Okay.
And Coyne does a lot of the lyrics and just, you know, working out.
I'm just trying to imagine what Coyne would do if he wasn't, you know, in a band.
Like, I think Draws was saying that one of the things he likes to do is like he tunes the guitar in a really weird way. I think it was, it might have been Vein of Stars.
Okay.
Where he had it like tuned into like this really weird F sharp sort of thing and didn't tell anybody he did it. And Coyne just picked it up and started playing and just like, trying to get a custom get a handle to where on the it, fuck yeah. it was. And that's how he came up with that riff. And
odd tunings can it leads you to doing things that you wouldn't normally do because your normal positions that you put your hands into don't sound the same. So things go in different directions, which is, you know, can lead to songs like that.
But yeah, if you listen to the explanations, Coyne is like not even aware of like, oh, why do you do that? He's like, well, you know, it's to give you pretty much what you just explained about coming up with new things. Yeah. And Draws, you know, was aware of, you know, like the final note of the album being that uplifting note and everything at the end, and just, you know, summing up the whole thing about taking Coyne's theme and putting it in and restating it in the music. Yeah.
Because when you play a particular instrument, and particularly if it's a chordophone, a piano or a guitar, for long enough, your hands get into habits.
Yeah.
You tend to do the same thing over and over again. And the nice thing about string instruments is you can retune them so that your habits don't sound the same when you play them in the new tuning. You know, and so it can lead to new ideas. Just a few notes about the bonus tracks.
Yeah, the bonus tracks. I mean, I saw they did the cover of Bohemian Rhapsody.
Bohemian Rhapsody, it's a very faithful cover, but it's very Coyne as well. It's hard to explain. They stayed completely straight and faithful to it, but it's through Wayne Coyne's mind.
Yeah.
And I think it's my new favorite cover of all.
Really?
Track 14, The Gold in the Mountain of Our Madness.
I don't think I've ever heard that one. Like, I've heard their cover of Bohemian Rhapsody. I think it was all right.
It's all right. It's nice. It's not quite up to par with the rest of the album, which is why I think it's a bonus track.
A B-side.
Another one that ends with some creepy sound effects. I think it's the only one that has almost exclusively fake drums on it.
Which is interesting.
I don't really hear any real drums.
Now, that's the thing with the soft bulletin. And why I decided not to do that one. Because there are different mixes of it. Oh. I think that's an album where they put out like, they did something with an album where they put out four different versions of the album that you were meant to play all at the same time on top of each other. Yeah, it's something fucking insane.
Coyne is going too far.
But yeah, this is what they were doing in the late 90s.
Yeah. Okay, they're past that point now.
But yeah, there were like all sorts of different mixes. Like there's the song, the first title track of the album, Race for the Prize. The mix I had these crazy loud drums in the mix, and I just fucking loved it and haven't heard that mix anywhere else since, honestly.
Wow.
Like that album also had like, you know, this song called Slow Motion that apparently you can't get in the US or even to stream it.
Oh,
because they mentioned Macy's, I think. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned the software. Yeah, probably a copyright thing.
So I decided with those things, like, let's stick with that War with the Mystics.
And finally, track 15, the Yeah 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 song, long version.
Is it just more of With All Your Powers?
It's like double the length of the first track. Has, I think, a slightly longer lead-in, maybe. And then there's this extended instrumental section. There's a sound effect solo. It's you know, we've heard those before on albums. They just took this middle section to just completely go over the top with, and at the very end you hear somebody in the band say, "I quit. I didn't make it all the way through that."
Oh yeah, that's how the
does the short one end that way too?
I thought it does.
I don't think so, because that caught me off guard. I almost fell down laughing when I heard him say.
It's a very Ringo Starr, you know. I got blisters on my fingers thing.
Yeah. But on the long version of the Yeah 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 song, it was funny. So, I mean, you picked this one, so obviously you recommend it.
Yeah. Glad to hear you enjoyed it too.
I had no idea what to expect going into this one. And no idea what to expect while I was listening to it. And that's a rare thing for me to say about an album. To not know it, where it's going.
Where it's going, yeah.
It's just incredibly creative, beautifully produced. I got to shout out the production a little more, because it's amazing.
Everything down to like the album art. Like, if you look at it, like, it's an old 70s kind of thing where they have the album title and then all the track listing and that on the cover like that.
And it's just beautifully weird in spots and just far more listenable than it has any right to be.
Yeah.
Nothing this weird should be this listenable.
This is where they caught lightning in a bottle, where they had the right balance of weird and listenability. And I think after this, they started the weirdness.
And you mentioned their progression, and I was going to chime in, I forgot. This is a band who started off basically as a wannabe Replacements.
Oh yeah, yeah, sort of. Oh, I don't know. You could have tossed them with Space Hog and, you know, all those other bands of the time. There really wasn't much to say about them. They didn't really stand out when we were playing.
Right.
We played this band in the early 90s.
We played their single, She Don't Use Jelly, and that's just country pop, a little bit, you know, country alternative,
right?
Very Replacements with some weird lyrics. That was really the only hint of where they were going was the lyrics.
Yeah.
And then they get Prague, and then apparently with Blame Point. I will say this based on what you said. I'd have to check it out for myself. It seems like Wayne Coyne is slowly disappearing up his own ass.
Well, I think he's come back a little bit. You know, I think I think as weird as this last album was, I think it's kind of returned to be more listenable than the stuff they were doing before this. Mm-hmm. Even though there's just some really crazy things on it. And they've had this weird thing with what's her name, Miley Cyrus.
Anybody else that would shock me and I would be confused. These guys, it makes sense.
Like she does. I think she sings part of Day in the Life on the Sgt. Pepper cover, which makes no fucking sense whatsoever.
And I think with Wrecking Ball, she proves she really can sing. So,
and she sings one of the tracks at the end of the latest album of theirs, We a Family.
Okay. Anybody else? Any you know, alternative weird prog band or whatever you want to call them, that would catch me off guard.
But she fits in with their countryside,
really.
Makes sense. People, myself included, we keep forgetting they are a country band in some way. They're kind of like, you know, well, with this much LSD. Country on acid, you could say.
Well, it's, like I said, it's, I'm going to say, given this the era of country, I'm going to say Willie Nelson, Frank Zappa, and with Floyd, who is it that was it Waters who comes up with the kind of, you know, big spacey stuff? Or was that more Gilmore?
Might have been Wright.
Right. Okay. So mix. So mix Willie Nelson, Frank Zappa, and Richard Wright.
Well, because think about it. Wright, you know, would be all the electronics effects and stuff that, you know, they really dig, you can tell.
Yeah, it would probably is more Wright's.
I mean, so, Mr. Ambulance Driver is completely based off of a ambulance siren.
Yeah.
So, and they admitted the explanation, too. But it was no news to me. You know, right, I've heard it. It's the beat of the ambulance
siren. Country prog, and it's a masterpiece. I'm really shocked. I'm going to have to do a deep dive. Anyway, that is it for At War with the Mystics. If you enjoyed this video, please give it a like and subscribe if you haven't. Until next time, we'll be reviewing Spilt Milk by Jellyfish. Onto some power pop after this insanity. Until then, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.